we're back. This is Morning Cannolis. My name is Jim Santel, your host this morning, this hour, and next as well. We're chatting about some recent news that has constitutional implications that derive from our Constitution. We chatted right before the break about what's going on in Chile in the coming weeks, and getting back to those issues right here in the United States of America, talking right before the break about something the Supreme Court did in the area of immigration. Once again, focusing on that very important issue for our nation and refusing to overturn a decision by a district court judge in Texas that prevented President Biden from going ahead with enforcement of his new rules with respect to arrests and deportations of immigrants in this country. Interestingly, the decision by the Fifth Circuit not to disrupt that ruling is somewhat completely contrary to the decision by another appeals court in the Sixth Circuit, basically Ohio and Kentucky and in Michigan, a case brought by three other states. A unanimous three-judge panel in the Sixth Circuit found that the federal law does, in fact, give the president, the national government, the authority over immigration policy, and therefore it upheld the rules implemented by the president. But the impact of the Tipton decision out of Texas is that all the rules are now suspended while the Supreme Court puts this on its docket, plainly is going to resolve, if you will, the dispute between the circuits about whether or not he can do this, a question once again of executive authority, his rulemaking authority, the capacity of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement folks, the ICE people, to do this sort of thing. As you know, immigration, a significant issue addressed by our Supreme Court in this asylum case of this past term, the Remain in Mexico policy, the Supreme Court saying that the president, any president, should in fact have the capacity to make decisions in this area and loosened up, if you will, the standards by which, once again, individuals who are seeking asylum can in fact remain, stay in the United States while those applications are pending. So lots of focus still, even after those major decisions are issued on immigration in America. Lots of things still happening. The other reason that particular case this past Thursday is significant is because it's the first time we heard from the new justice on the Supreme Court, who was just confirmed this past term, Ketanji Brown Jackson. Heard from her for the first time. She recorded her first vote since she was being sworn in last month. She dissented with her colleagues. Two other colleagues on the Supreme Court felt that the United States Supreme Court should take this on, should impose a stay, if you will, upon Judge Tipton's order, permitting the rules to go forward. And so that's the first time we heard from her. We will certainly be hearing more from her throughout the summer, we suspect, and certainly in October and beyond as the new term of the Supreme Court kicks into action. Let's talk more about the implications of all this. We also had the same day on Thursday of this past week, somewhat locally here, the Marquette University Law School released one of its fairly famous polls. Does polling. One of the professors there routinely does this kind of polling. And during the course of the polling most recently, questions asked about how people feel about the United States Supreme Court and some very significant issues that we've chatted about before here on Morning Cannolis. The impact of what Professor Franklin there and the Marquette University Law School tells us based upon this nationwide poll, not just in Wisconsin, not just in the Midwest, but throughout the nation, is that the view, the impression, the sensibility that Americans have about the United States Supreme Court has declined dramatically. And so let's talk a little bit about the results of Professor Franklin's polling recently. And back in March of this year, about 54% of the American population approved of what the Supreme Court was doing. That dropped to about 44% in May, and now to a new low of about 38% in July, approve of the United States Supreme Court, according to the poll taken by the Marquette University Law School. And undeniably, based upon some other results of that poll, a result of the American response to things like the abortion decision, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization overruling Roe versus Wade, probably other cases as well, the Bruin case, which we'll mention again in just a little while, the environmental case having to do with the decision by the Supreme Court that says that the president does not, in fact, have the capacity to impose and enforce rules with respect to greenhouse gases, addressing climate change and global warming on the face of the planet, including right here in the United States of America. So lots of decisions that probably impacted that declining sense reported by, again, Professor Charles Franklin of the Marquette University Law School. 38% now of Americans approve how the court is handling this job. 61% disapprove. The worst numbers that the national poll has ever recorded. Significantly among women, the court's approval rating dropped from 55% in March to 45% in May to 33% in July. After some of these major cases were handed down by the court, including the case finding that Roe versus Wade, the privacy right under the Constitution to an abortion in America, no longer exists, returning all of these decisions to the states, including right here in Wisconsin and other states around the nation, rescinding a 49-and-a-half-year policy and practice, and finding by the United States Supreme Court that such a right does in fact vest in the United States Constitution by virtue of our privacy interests. So a significant tanking, if you will, as the headline reads, of the overall approval of Americans of our United States Supreme Court. We also talked in the past about the United States Supreme Court's decision way back in January having to do with executive privilege and finding that the former president, Donald Trump, did not in fact have the capacity to withhold documents generated during the course of his term, especially around the time of the January 6th insurrection, the riot at the Capitol, an attempt to stop the polling, the taking of electoral votes from the states, the counting of votes from the most recent presidential election. The Supreme Court way back in January said that there is nothing about the Constitution, nothing about the doctrine of executive privilege that would prevent the production of all those executive materials to the January 6th committee, which again, much in the news this past week, including a recent hearing this past Thursday. And the Supreme Court basically said no executive privilege applies. And there was another reflection of that this past week, as you know well. Just yesterday, Steve Bannon, a sometimes former senior advisor to former President Trump, was found guilty of contempt in this case. It was related to the Capitol riot inquiry and executive privilege. You may recall well that the January 6th committee, Benny Thompson, once again had issued a subpoena to him. Actually, a subpoena that required his testimony and also documents provided. And Steve Bannon's decided to disregard both of them. And eventually, the Department of Justice indicted him, grand jury indictment, 2 counts of obstruction of justice, guilty yesterday of contempt of Congress, and found guilty by a jury after just a few hours of deliberation in the wake of his decision to go to trial, which is his right. We'll talk more about that and the implications of that right after the break, and then also talk beyond that about one other matter having to do with the constitutional issues that we have talked about before, and that is guns. This Bruin case, what is the impact of Bruin? And then believe it or not, also the impact of Dobbs on a guns case also out there. Come back right for the break. This is the Shaw in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM.